Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to another Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon. Max, I know it wasn't your week at Wingfoot, but Anthony Davis and Aaron Rodgers had to have helped, man. Your teams are rolling.
Yeah, it's awesome. Someone reached out on Twitter yesterday and said, "Hey, I'm a Nuggets fan. Can you please put a timestamp on the talk about the Lakers?" Whatever. And so I feel bad if you're listening to this. I do apologize. And, you know, saying sorry, it's very big of me to even say sorry. It was awesome. What a weekend. I've had two back-to-back great weekends in sports. Aaron looks like he told MVP? Me before the season, he said he felt real, real good. And it's showing. So that's cool. When I say I feel real, real good, I shoot 14 over, apparently. So it's cool to see a real, you know, real superstar. And then, yeah, that was the most, just not even talking about teams or whatever, although mine did win. That was the most excited I've been watching a sport. I was the most like transported out of 2020. I felt like I was in my room. My heart was pounding. And, you know, we have something great happen. He yells Kobe, which was so sick. I don't know. That was fun.
I was talking to one of our mutual friends earlier today on the phone. You know,
on the phone, very old school. Hey,
listen, buddy, you're next month. You're a month away. Get ready for 30. You start calling your friends. You're a caller. Yeah, I feel like you call. I
mean, I'm in the car caller.
Okay. And by the way, I just want to tell people you're still in New York. Beat you out of New York.
Yeah, it's not great.
And one of the reasons we're recording late is I brought all of the necessary equipment for our podcast in person and forgot to bring any of the equipment I needed to do it on the phone. I was obviously not thinking ahead. Both of us had a Wingfoot. A long week.
Shane, how was the broadcast? It was you know awesome. What? I literally wasn't allowed to watch it here.
You couldn't watch it.
I couldn't even support my buddy and my co-host, my colleague. I wasn't even allowed to support.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends ask, how do I listen to it? You know, I had to throw the joke at them a lot. You can fly to New Zealand. It's probably really nice. They're probably not going to let you in 2020. If you could fly over there, maybe watch it in a security, you know, bungalow or something. Yeah. But it was a great week. Ned Michaels, who I co-hosted with, is awesome. I'm not sure I've ever, this is across all platforms, I'm not sure I've ever worked with someone that was more prepared for a broadcast than Ned was this week. He had more information on every player because, you know, we're showing so much more golf than the American broadcast because a lot of countries don't go to commercial. So we're doing 7 hours, no break.
Someone out there is triggered right now.
Oh, yeah, no. They're like, whoa, I got to move. Wait a minute. I need to move.
Maybe actually. I will
I've got to move. What country? Go to Switzerland. And so we show so much golf because, again, I mean, certain countries don't go to breaks. And, you know, but every time we're filling outside of kind of the NBC window, it's international players. And Ned is throwing out these stats on these players. I felt, for the first 2 days, I felt massively unprepared and inferior. And I also, sadly,
Welcome to my world. That's how I feel when we do these things. So you're Ned Michaels.
There you go. And you know, again, this was poor preparation on my part. But, you know, in U.S. Opens have passed that I've worked with Fox, I have stat people there and research people. And that research person is my laptop that I'm looking into right now. So
it's like you played a tournament without a caddy for the first time.
Yeah,
and no yardage book.
It was a great week. It was a lot of fun. You know, I was calling the U.S. Open. I mean, it wasn't, you know, in the United States, but I was getting a chance to call it for the most part. The last hour and a half was Ned and I for the international broadcast. So out there somewhere is audio of us calling the Bryson birdies and the Wolf bogeys and all those things. So it was a lot of fun. You were on twice. I yelled at my producer, and I'm joking when I say yell.
Yeah.
But they showed Charles Howell and Ishikawa on Friday on 9, which I think was your last hole, right?
Yeah, because they needed a birdie or Charles made eagle, but they both needed a birdie and a par to make the cut.
Yeah, so they were showing them, and I hit my producer. I go, "You got to show Homa."
Yeah,
and so he obviously had you on tape. So
one of my two birdies.
Yeah, he showed you hit it in, and then he showed you roll up the eagle putt and tap in for birdie. So that was my doing. Anybody watching the international broadcast?
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, no problem. There's a podcast love for the thing, but I want to play a game with you to start this podcast about the U.S. Open and about Wingfoot, and it's called True or Boo. Okay. Like you're booing someone, not like the Halloween.
Word. I love it.
And the first one we're starting with, and these were kind of subjects. I know I've mentioned a couple of times. I've been avoiding social media the last few weeks. It's been just glorious.
God,
but
bless you.
Yeah, it's been really nice. I think at this point, me saying I'm not on social media is like people that tell you they're vegans. You know, you've got to kind of say it.
You got to say
it. It's
all
a badge
times.
Of honor, right?
Yeah, but it is.
I'm not on social media right now. So
you're so
boo,
trendy.
Oh, I'm so free. You know, I'm not attached.
It's
to my
hard
phone.
To be on Twitter when I have my typewriter out instead of my laptop.
So okay, true or boo? First question: Wingfoot was set up too easy, Max.
Boo. Okay. I'm glad you asked this. I've been wanting to talk about this. Just like a tournament, from a player's perspective, it's a 4-day process. You can't crown a winner after Thursday. So, especially in the U.S. Open, especially on a demanding golf course, there needs to be a process, in my opinion, to how the superintendent, how the USGA sets up the course. Thursday, we had the best weather day you can imagine. It felt a lot like last year, you know, your U.S. Open at Pebble. Very little wind, if any, not a lot of sun at all. Course was going to play as soft as it could. And throughout the week, the greens were really soft for any golfers, but especially U.S. Open. Now, we started to feel them firm up Wednesday afternoon. I remember, you know, playing with some of the guys and we're like, uh-oh, like here it comes a little bit. Like they're sucking the water out of it. But Thursday was soft-ish, and the pins out here have to be in bowls because if you've ever been here, there's only bowls on these greens. That's what makes it so difficult. So,
but real quick, when you say bowls, do you mind just expanding? I mean,
yeah,
there are kind of backstops and slopes
that
they'll put pins in certain areas, and if you're out of position, so if there's a bowl and it's to the right of the hole and behind the hole, if you're right of the green, you're screwed. If you're left of the green, you can play a shot.
Correct. So I'll use this hole as an example. Number one, because they had the pin there on Sunday, which was middle left between two massive ridges. And yes, both ridges bring the ball back to the hole. But if you are looking straight at the pin from the middle left side of the fairway, you would be able to see a little bit of the pin and then it would go back down and go back up. So that's where the it lies. So in the morning, I was watching golf and Dustin hit it in that left bunker and hit this very cool bunker shot way up to high left. And it fed back to like a foot and he made par. I understand to all involved watching, you're like, that is such a joke. This is such a feeder pin. Well, I was in the fairway and hit a poor iron shot left of the pin just where Dustin did and my ball plugged. I did not have a good lie. Even if I had a decent lie, that shot Dustin played is quite difficult. If you miss it, you are in trouble, and I'll show you where the ball could have gone to. So my ball is plugged. I have no real play. I try to play it a little bit left of the pin, but not much. And of course, you can't stop it. Ball rolls, and I had 95 feet from the front right of the green for par. And I understand my ball was plugged, but if I had hit a bunker shot that wasn't great from that same spot, it would have rolled to the front right of the green. Angles mattered a lot. I tweeted that. I said, they're only feeder pins, funnel pins, if you have the correct angle, even from the rough. So, you know, we'll talk about Bryson more, I'm sure. But the leaders, when I watched on TV, the shots they hit close came from the correct side of the rough. I know people don't want to hear that. You want to be in the fairway, but they did come from the correct side of the rough. So if you could manage to control the distance, it would run the angle that you needed to slow the golf ball down and get it in this little bowl. If you missed the bowl, whether it was putt or with a chip, you were in a really bad spot. I had a chip on 15 where I hit it short of the green in two, had a very awkward chip, truly still like I didn't really know how I was going to play it. I could have flown it there. I could have, you know, chipped an 8-iron. I could have whatever, but all the letting the ball roll would have made the ball break so much. And I saw a shot that if I clipped it nicely, I could hit a gap wedge, two hops over the first ridge. And if I ran high enough onto the next hill, it would roll back to the hole and I hit it to a foot. That was the best example I had of using the angles to my advantage. Now, I have referenced chips mostly. I know I've referenced a couple of shots, but I've referenced chips. The scores show that the ball didn't feed to the pins on iron shots enough because you had to be so precise. And when you took those shots on, you were really bringing in a lot of trouble. And I think that's what yesterday showed on the first hole. You saw so many people have a hard time with number one. And Bryson and Matt hit it amazing. You saw how amazing those two shots were, right? They were very precise. They were in the right spot. They also both came from the fairway. So to your question, the setup was not too easy. I think that there's a plan. Thursday kind of had to be, because if you were going to make that course harder as it went on, if you started at how Friday was supposed to be, because there's a forecast to weather, guys. I don't know if you know this, but they actually have that information. Friday was going to be ridiculous. And Friday afternoon, I am not lying to you, Charles Howell and I were talking about how this is bordering on unfair is the wrong word, because we're not bitching and moaning and complaining about it, but we're saying it's getting real close to being like, these balls aren't going to stop on these slopes. And they're also getting so firm. We're running balls up on intense false fronts. Like, so, you know, shot Tron. They were firm on Friday. Now, again, Saturday, I went out there to practice and it was really windy and cold in the morning. And I was like, wow, this is going to be biblical again.
Right.
And the wind stopped in the afternoon. So we didn't get to see the carnage. And then Sunday, it kept up the all day. And that's what you saw. So the USGA has been scrutinized for making golf courses unfair. And I know that there's a small bunch of people out there, small portion of people out there that love, they would like to see 30 over before one under. And I get it. You know, that you are entitled to your opinion, but the USGA has been scrutinized for things like Shinnecock, where they've had greens that are unplayable. So what they need is a plan. And that's what they use. They saw that Friday is going to be ridiculous. If they stress those greens Thursday, Friday is now unplayable. We're going to have holes that are comical. And I understand at Tron that you like that, that people like that, but there's not a lot of them. And what gave me solace this week is I saw a tweet, and it was actually a political tweet, and these don't typically give me much hope for the world, but somebody said something like, you know, we on Twitter, we on social media are fighting these battles that are so small yet feel so important that are, you know, people aren't even considering talking about because they're just so not, it's just not the main point, and it's not a big of big importance. But on here you see the same thing every day, and it just reminded me of the golf that I keep hearing people saying how easy and soft and all this is, yet I think it's a much smaller portion of people that think that. But if you're on Twitter, it feels like that's the majority. I don't buy that it was too easy. I just think that you can't let the course go. One guy shot 600, no one else broke par, by the way, good prediction. I mean, It was very, very hard. Yeah. I don't understand why we can't appreciate great golf. We spend so much time frustrated in the setup when Matt Wolf shoots 5 under, and it felt very much like no one was giving him any credit. It was just, this course is too easy. And that round of golf was so freaking good. And I was a little busy today, and but I was planning on doing this, looking up the stat, but I do remember it. After two rounds at the US Open at Pebble that we all marvel at, Tiger won by a million, 15, and was the only one under par. And I think he was, you know, 12 under. I think after two rounds, he was leading at 6, but I think there were a couple people at 5 and possibly a couple people at 4 and so on. And then at the end of the week, there's only one score under par. And we marvel at how amazing Tiger Woods' accomplishment was. And this week we don't marvel at Bryson. We talk about how stupid the setup was. So or how easy the setup was. So I don't buy that. And I will not never agree with you there. I also hate to do this part, because I think that as a fan, you should have every right. And you do have every right, but I think you should have the opinion you want to have, but I'm going to flex here. I played it. I was there. I've played more golf than any of you have. I played more championship golf than you have. That setup was awesome. And it's just, weather means a lot. And Thursday just played, if it was windier Thursday, even if the greens were that soft, I just don't think it would have played very easy, but it just was a perfect day. And even still, what, 5 under was leading? I mean, geez, right. Louise.
Going into 2000, I just looked it up. Tiger was 8 under. There were 2 players at -2 and 2 players.
Okay. So after the first day, they were 6, 6, 5, and 5. I remember there was one day.
6, 6, 5, 4, 3, and 2.
Okay,
and there was a whole bunch of players.
Yeah. So it's quite similar. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys, man. It was hard. Like, that's what I can tell you. It was hard. I had a guy in my group make 1 birdie in 2 days to make the cut. I made 2 birdies in 2 days. Charles Howell made 3 birdies in 2 days. I mean, goodness, like, we are great. That's 2 people making the cut. So I know I played bad, but there are 3 great golfers in a group truly struggling to make birdie.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed the days and the weather. I went out Saturday morning And, you know, we got out there fairly early, probably around 9:30 or 10 in the morning. I was in a golf cart out right around 9 or 10. It's blowing.
Yeah, that's when max. I got there. Yeah, it was humming.
It was blowing 20 miles an hour. There's not one person under par. The field was like 87 over, and it was only half the field on the golf course. I was texting friends of mine. I was telling them, like, this is going to be one of those days in a U.S. Open. And then the wind just stopped. It just stopped. And, you know, if the wind, again, here lies the issue. Do you want to see, at a U.S. Open, you want to see players tested? You know, I love that Sandy Tatum quote, right? Like, we're not trying to embarrass the players. We're trying to identify the best players, right? That was from 1974 at the U.S. Open. And it's, again, you're going to embarrass the players if the wind's blowing 20 and you have it right on the edge. Because nobody's going to play well, and 74 is going to be the best score. If the wind goes away, then you're going to be able to go out there and shoot 65.
But you should be able to flex.
That's right.
I shot 8 over the first day. You know what I mean? So, and I know you could say I played horrible, and yeah, maybe I did, but I don't shoot 8 over super often.
Right.
And it just felt so easy. I mean, you just hit it in one bad spot, and you're just tested, and you're tested in every facet of your game. And like I said, on Friday afternoon, that back nine was – or my back nine, so the front was so hard and so firm. I mean, and by the way, firm also means the fairways are going to be firm. So the ball's going forever. But on, you know, 7 is this par 3 with a very big false front. And since I had no real chance of making the cut, obviously I'm trying to have some fun with some golf shots. And Ryo Ishikawa hits before me, and he lands a ball maybe 2 yards past pins front left. So if you miss it short, the ball will roll down probably 30 yards short of the green. You have a very awkward chip because it's, like I said, it's a very big false front. Ryo hits a good shot middle of the green, maybe lands 2-3 pass and ends up 50 feet long. And now he has a pretty difficult two putt. I decided I was going to kind of play like a little British Open shot, and I took a 9-iron and hit a low hook, and I actually landed it short of the green and ran it up the hill and hit it pin high. I would have never, ever, ever hit that shot in if I had a chance in the tournament, but that's how short I had to play that shot. And that this slope I'm talking is 50 degrees like upright. I mean, it's a hike to walk up. So, and then the next hole, number 8, I hit a bomb down there. So I'm, of course, you know, you talk about the ball going far or whatever. I hit a bomb down there. It was very firm, but I hit it 370 or something. I have a gap wedge into a 500-yard par 4. But then that shot I had to play, I landed it 15 paces short of the pin and ended up maybe a pace short of the pin. And then 9, I hit 9-iron into a 560-yard par 5. And sure, like, again, yeah, it's, but that's the wind direction, because that's how that's a part of the golf course. And then I hit a 9-iron, but I landed that 9-iron on the very front edge or maybe short of the pin and end up just past pin high. So that just reminded me, I saw another quote that somebody said, 16, 17, 8, it was PGA Tour player, very good one. I can't remember who it was, but they said, you know, 16, 17, 18 at Wingfoot is like the whatever, like the toughest stretch, blah, blah, blah. They called it something, some saying. And, you know, somebody was like, quote tweeted, it was like, yeah, and this is what's wrong. These holes haven't played hard. Well, if that guy, whoever said that first, came back and played it this week, he would have said, man, 1, 2, 3, 4 is that, you know, because that's the opposite wind direction.
Right.
I'm sorry that 16 through 18 played downwind. Like, I'm sorry, but
nothing we can do.
1 through 4 was the hardest stretch of the golf, I thought, on the course.
Yeah, I mean, it just, again, this is all dependent on everything. It depends on, to your point, the wind, the weather, if you get rain, if you have to make sure you keep the golf course at a certain place, because if things do come up, you don't want it to just get completely lost. I mean, the USGA spends 2 years at Wingfoot. 2 years. They're there for 2 years. They're not just occasionally checking in on the golf course. They have people stationed around Wingfoot working there on a daily and weekly basis. So they're trying to make this a great championship, and it was a great championship. So the complaining probably needs to stop. Here's my next true or boo. Hitting fairways doesn't matter anymore. It's a tough one.
Depends the course. I think that's kind of a given. I still think hitting fairways matters. I will say that it matters less. So
gotcha.
What you say it doesn't matter, I think is such a look at the score. So I'll just use that as the reference point. There was one score under par and nobody hit fairways. So I'm going to say true to an extent.
Okay.
If we had played the same level of rough this week, however, the let's just say the golf course around the greens and on the greens was much more gettable. So these greens here are quite nuts. I think Tiger said this is Augusta National with rough. I think you would have seen a slightly bigger separation of someone who is hitting 25% of the fairways to somebody who's hitting 45%. Something I would like to see done if we are going to continue to nitpick and complain, which I'm tired of, but if we are going to do that, this golf course, it wasn't so much, I think I completely either understood the course or misspoke when I said this won't be a bomb and gouge tournament. My point was, is you're not going to see low scores based off bomb and gouge. I guess you could still see someone win doing that theory. The difference I see with this as quote unquote bomb and gouge versus other weeks is this, you really did have to gouge. Most of you don't. And this week, the quality of shot it takes to be in the fairway is high. This course is very hard to hit the fairways. It's very, very hard. We talked to some USGA guys from 2006 and they were saying that, you know, the most fairway somebody hit and the most green somebody hit was so low in reference to somebody in a normal tour event week. So I think that's your issue, is that it's so hard to hit fairways for everyone. So of course, length is going to help a lot, even if you are in the rough, because everyone's going to be in the rough. So do I think hitting fairways doesn't matter? No, I think it does matter. I think that you would have seen more birdies had people been in the fairway, but these fairways are so freaking hard to hit. You're just not going to see that a lot. And again, we look at the guy who won and the guy who got second didn't hit a lot of fairways, right? So you can say, oh, hitting fairways doesn't matter. But you guys are the same people who are talking about the golf course, not so much the players. And the golf course still won. I mean, you have one guy who played amazing golf and shot 6 under, but 6 under is still very, very, very high compared to our normal average. And the next best score is even, and that doesn't happen almost ever out on a normal tour event week. So I still think it matters, but it's just, what are you saying, you know, does it matter compared to other players in the field, or does it matter to beating the golf course? Because I think it still does to beating the golf course. You couldn't beat that golf course from the rough. It was just shown, you know, we have one guy shoot 6 under. The rest of the field struggled.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Next one, Bryson has changed the game of golf.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has. Again, I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but I still think everyone's hitting it further. I don't even think he's the longest one out here. So,
well, you know, we saw. I mean, Max, we saw Wolf on Sunday. Wolf was past him in the fairway a few times, and well past him. I mean, yeah. On 9, Bryson did a great drive, and you know, Wolf was some 15, 20 yards past him. So
totally,
he's not the longest guy. I'm just the game, philosophy, the game. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely becoming more scientific. I think he's not the only one who's looked at it like that. I think anyone who aim points has looked at putting now as a science, less as an art. And I think that's okay. Everyone's kind of, their brains function differently. I don't know if I could do that. Just my own, you know, everyone has their own kind of way of thinking. I do have a funny take. I thought about this one for a while yesterday. I was talking to my friends about it. It's possible, given this question, it's possible that Bryson has put on all this weight and started swinging super fast and done all this transformation has all been kind of a smoke screen to this putting style that I'm not a fan of. Rory referenced it yesterday. You can't say it's cheating because it is allowed.
Because it's allowed, right.
I have never been a fan of it. The fact that it's called anchored when anchored is banned is so odd to me. I don't personally believe in that method as far as the spirit of golf. I'm not knocking him for doing it. He and other people for doing it. You are totally allowed to. I don't like it personally. It does not feel... I'm all good with the greens books. I wish they weren't there, but I'm okay with them. I'm okay with a lot of the science stuff we're hearing about. I'm okay with the TrackMan stuff or the flight scope stuff. Like, I'm okay with it. Do I wish it wasn't there? Yeah, like I wouldn't mind. It would make preparing for things so much more important. But whatever, they're there, and that's just, you know, the world we live in. We're making advancements. That to me is taking it a little far. And that's just my opinion. I didn't like belly putting, but the belly putter. I didn't like the chest putter. I don't like this. I just don't agree with the intention of it. Bryson is incredibly underrated at putting. I was sitting around with somebody on Saturday and they said, man, he's an average putter. And I said, he's literally the 10th best putter on the PGA Tour. And 3 years ago, he was 140.
This is weird. We have this website that has a lot of stats on it.
But that's the thing is, he smoke screened us to how good he hits it. This week, I think he had probably one of his best short iron and around the green weeks. And that's why he won. And as we talked about before, Jeff Ogilvy said, that's how you'll win. But he's an amazing putter, man. And it's cool to see. However, I wonder as far as change the game goes, I almost think that the USGA or someone will look more at the putting style first, than the golf ball, or not the golf ball, the driver speeds. So I'm curious, but I mean, then again, they already did this and it's almost like they kind of shot themselves in the foot. Cause are they going to go do this again? I don't know. So not a huge fan of how people putt like that. But listen, like it's well within the rules and I don't knock anyone for doing it, but changing the game, I think he has. And I think it's more in the putting than it is everything else.
Yeah. The arm lock is on the forearm. The putter runs up his forearm. Bryson is a guy. And I wrote this summer about this whole experience we had when he was doing face on putting. Tell me what you think about this. I think Bryson's best skill as a professional golfer is his ability to immerse himself in one philosophy and try it out until he's exhausted everything. So he did the face on putting, right? You know, he referenced, you know, all the history behind it and how many old players did it and, you know, why it's so much greater and why it's so much better, because Bryson came out on tour, Max, and was not a great putter. He was an okay putter, but he was not a great
traditional putter. Yeah.
Traditional putter. Right. I would even almost go to the
go low as far on as the rankings. Saying. Yeah.
Right. And then he did face on and now he's doing this. And you know, I mean, we've seen it obviously with the body transformation. To your point, I love the idea of it kind of being a little bit of a smokescreen, but he does just completely dive into these philosophies. And it's not an easy thing to do in any industry. I mean, golf or broadcasting or finance or accounting, you know, it's not easy to 100% put yourself in your job, you know, and what he does is it's the practice, but it's the buying into the philosophy that he uses to practice and trying to find what is going to work best for him. And I feel like that's what he's done. And to your point, I mean, the arm lock or whatever you call it is a legal putting style that he has throughout using crosshand and claw, I'm sure he's done, and face on and all these ways of putting. This is the one that he has found works the best for him, and it's the way he gets the ball in the hole the fastest. So until it's outlawed, hey, good on you. You know, it works for you, and that's what we're seeing. And again, I applaud him because of that. You know, I mean, we can say all the stuff we want to say about Bryson. I applaud him for not being scared about looking goofy, looking weird. You know, I mean, the face on putting thing is a weird look, you know, and side saddle's weird. It's strange. He's doing it in a tournament. I do applaud him for that. I mean, of all the things he does that I occasionally, you know, shake my head at or roll my eyes, that is the one thing that I do give him credit for.
Here's my Bryson take. And I watched him, especially this week, but I actually did an interview about this a year ago where a writer, I won't mention his name, but he basically came up to me. I might have mentioned this on the podcast, but he was essentially asking me questions about Bryson. And is it going to be a hit piece? You could feel it. Like he was going to talk about how Bryson is a fraud, basically. And what I said
by the way, that would not age well.
No, not at all. So what I said was that we spend so much time focusing on how smart and innovative he is, and so little time on the fact that he is so freaking good at golf and he works so hard. I could not respect a guy a whole lot more in sports. So here's to your point about how he has this amazing ability to immerse himself in one thing. I actually think, and this kind of goes to my point, and I don't blame you for thinking this, it's actually a very common golfer trait. You could go down the range and I've talked to Pat Perez multiple times where Pat Perez has found it. He figured it out. Oh, I should be only using TrackMan. That is how I do things. And then, you know, a month and a half later, it's the opposite. Phil Mickelson, if you ever listen to him talk about his putting, oh, it's obviously claw from from 15 feet and in, but it's left hand low from out. And then you'll see him at some point not putt claw. So when he figured it out, it never seems to be figured out. So my point is that, again, we are focusing on things Bryson does that isn't hitting the golf ball. When you talk about Justin Thomas and about how good how well he hits his irons, we just talk about how well he hits his irons. When Bryson hits a great iron shot, we talk about how he's figured out this system. No, he's just really freaking good at it. Like,
right.
I wish he would play regular length clubs just so you could see just how he could still do it. Like, he's just got it. Yeah, he has his system, but everyone has a system to a point. You know, we can even go to the opposite person of Bryson DeChambeau is Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson, whether he calls it a system or not, has a system. It's very much be an athlete, see ball, hit ball, make ball curve, you know, caveman golf in the best possible way. And that's how, if I could play anyway, I would do that, because I would have a harder time with Bryson's. But again, we focus so much on this Bryson's breaking golf, and Bryson works harder than you do at anything. Like, he is, I think I work hard. And the fact that he can even put on this weight is amazing.
And practice, and he's so amazing.
I wish we focus more on that for him. I respect the hell out of him, man. And I wish people talked more about how great he is at hitting a golf ball and less about all the, granted, he's brought that on himself, but all the extra BS. That's the stuff that doesn't interest me, because I think everyone has that to an extent. His is a lot louder. His is a lot more focused on, because like you said, it's a lot goofier looking. He's an amazing golfer, man. He hits the ball better than 99% of people I've ever seen in my life. He hits it up there as pure as anyone you'll ever see hit a golf ball. And look, this week he even had a great short game. So he putts it as well. I mean, we focus on the wrong stuff. If it was anybody else with a, you know, flat bill hat and not a fedora or whatever it's called, we would be so
what
much
is
more
it
focused.
Called? Newspaper cap?
Yeah, I don't know. I always call it the Kangol because it was Kangol back in the day. But yeah, we would just focus so much more on his talent and so much less on this BS to me. And it's not BS. It works for him, but it just doesn't, that doesn't interest me. What interests me is how well he hits a seven iron, how pure it is.
Well, and I mean, now all I'll say is that he talks about it a lot too.
No, so I know I he brings he, it on
he,
himself.
He puts it on himself as well. I'm with you. I was diving into, as he was finishing up the last two or three holes, you know, my job as a broadcaster is kind of paint the picture of what's going on. And this is a philosophy I've heard a few times from people that really know golf. You know, Bryson didn't find this at 26 as a pro. He didn't find this at 27 when he gained the weight. Bryson won junior tournaments at AJGA tournaments in the US Amateur and the NCAAs. Like, he won all these events.
Does this feel like the ROM thing, that where every week in a big event, someone says he figured out his mental game and that's whatever, but it's like John Rahm's literally just like Bryson been the best at every level he's ever been at. So that's not why he's playing well.
I think sometimes the focus, and again, I don't know. I don't really even want to say blame. I don't know who to put it on. Is it on critics, fans, golf people? Is it on Bryson himself, you know, who's put a lot of his stuff on himself because he talks about it all the time? And he, you know, I mean, this week he won the US Open and he's talking in pre-tournament pressers about the driver he's going to use at Augusta. Like, he does this to himself for the most part. And I think that's a reason to like him, because he's always thinking ahead and he's always trying to come up with the best way it works for him. And it's also why, you know, he gets a lot of shit, is because it's easy to poke fun at this guy who, I think you and I both said this before, you know, he's a guy that's obsessed with golf.
That's awesome.
Obsessed with golf. Like, he loves it.
Show me someone who does more for what they do than he does. Like,
right. That's my point. So I got true or boo. Last one about this. There's no defense to length. There's no defense anymore to length. True or boo?
True. I will, again, as I've done all these things, unfortunately, I have to poke it. Like, what are we defending? Is par the defense? Because we could just change par. So yeah, there is a defense. We can make par 46 and everyone will be over par. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know what we're defending. Are we defending the integrity of the golf course? Then length at some point will ruin that. So I'll go, that's why I'm saying true. You know, we're going to have bunkers that are no longer in play. But then listen, man, you keep building up these, the rough. We want to be in the bunkers, like, as opposed to the rough. So then are you just going to make a hole in the ground, like, you know, British Open style across the pond style? Because then you're going to be bored because it's just a pitch out. So I don't know what we're defending, but yes, I mean, there is no defense to length because people are going to hit it further and further. I think there is a cap at some point, but I want to point out, I don't think, and I'm not one of those people that thinks that the technology has not helped. I think that technology is awesome. I got this new Tyler Sharp this week that I drove it so well. I bombed it all over the place. I'm in 9-iron into 9 at winged foot. Like I smoked it all week. It was awesome, but I don't hit the ball 390 at home, man. The fairways are very firm. It's a lot of these places, and you play holes that are into the wind and downwind. Into the wind on two, what's the bunker? It's like 280 to it. I was like, 10 yards short of it, it went 270. Like, so part
flew
of this
like
stuff,
255.
Yeah, part of this stuff is a little bit like your eyes go nuts at the number, yet the other number into the wind, you're not looking at. Bryson, Joe and I were talking about, Bryson hit it on 12, the par five, the second day in the morning when we were watching. He hit a ball 185 miles an hour, which is super fast. And they had the carry number on it, and it carried 282, which is nowhere compared to the speed. Dustin and his same group hit 172 ball speed and flew at 277. So Bryson's letting that thing go up as high as he can, which is scary. Like that, again, kudos to him because that's not a fun place. You don't want the ball in the air. Dustin hit a flat ball that was much more efficient in the wind. Yet, again, Dustin Johnson went the longest on tour. Bryson went the longest on tour. They hit the ball 284 and 279 probably after the roll. So, yeah, I mean, Dustin hit a 418-yard drive. That's awesome. That fairway was a rock. It was as firm as the greens. So I just don't – at some – distance is an issue, but I just think that we also played holes where bunkers were very much in play. I know, like you mentioned, I think, like at St. Andrews, there's bunkers that you look around the first time you play, and you're like, why the hell is this bunker? And then one day you play it with a lot of wind, you're like, wow, that's why this bunker's here. It's actually in play. So that's kind of how I look at it. But yeah, I don't think there's a defense to length. I mean, at some point, but again, it depends what you're defending. So if you're defending the integrity of how it was designed, sure. But I think that's a kind of like everything. We see it in every sport right now. Baseball has become just swing as hard as you can at a home run. Basketball has become shoot as many threes as you can and move as fast as you can up and down the court. And we have this idea that the integrity of the game is in how it was started. I don't personally believe that. But there are points where I do, but I don't. I guess one defense to length would be make the greens literally insane, which they kind of did at Wingfoot. And that's why the score, as much as you guys want to say, it played easy. It didn't. So there's one score under par.
It didn't play easy. Again, that is the thing. I guess I'm a bit confused hearing come from the general golf public is, you know, I signed on to Twitter, you know, on my computer to post a couple things about our work this week. And, you know, the people are posting Wingfoot pillows and they're saying how soft it is.
Charmin.
You're like, it's just one guy played well. One guy, one guy played really well.
Yeah.
Unbelievably well, historically well. He set all these records and did all this crazy stuff. And only, you know, Jack and Tiger have won NCAAs and amateurs and a U.S. Open. And he's the only player to shoot under par and win a U.S. Open since 1955. I mean, these are things that don't happen a lot, right? And I think we are, for whatever reason, not talking enough about Bryson's final round, which is one of the best rounds in the history of the U.S. Open. And, you know, when you looked at the strokes gained in the final round, I think it's like the fourth best since 1960. You know, I mean, it was not that far behind Johnny Miller 63 at Oakmont. So what he did was different. Again, if we would have had Twitter and podcasts in 2000, I'm just wondering if people would have been saying the same thing because Tiger played well and shot a million under and nobody else did. Was it too easy because what Tiger did, or was it too hard because of what everybody else did? You know?
Yeah, I like that. That's a very good point.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
I do have a quote because you talked a little about this from Hale Irwin. Of course, you know, he won at Wingfoot in 74. And I saw this
very
quote
similar leaderboard, by the way.
Yeah, kind of wild, right? We had that graphic up on
Sunday. Almost the same one.
told Golf Digest this, and I really like this quote, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. He said, "Have we lost our traditional comparisons of eras? I always thought that's been a part of the allure of the game, is that regardless of technology, you can compare Bobby Jones to Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. I'd hate to see us lose that connection with players of this era and beyond. We need to maybe stop and think about what we want to do with the future of the game and what's the best thing for golf. I'm not saying I have the answers. I just think we should be asking these questions." I found that enlightening because it's not just, he's not complaining about what Bryson did. He was very complimentary about how well he played from tee to green all day, all week for 72 holes. But I go back to what Bryson did at the Rocket Mortgage when he won, you know, and he said, he's flying corners and he's hitting it over bunkers. That, I think, is the one thing that I do agree with the golf woke world is if we get to Augusta and Bryson's hitting a driver on 13 into 14 fairway, you know, it's not Augusta, right? Is it Augusta if you're doing that? I don't know. What do you think? I mean, is that just taking advantage of what's out there?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think where I lie on this topic is, and this is coming from a player, so I know it's biased, but for some reason, the players get blamed for this. That's kind of the light it comes out. I don't know. You hear that even just the denotation of Bryson's breaking golf is like Bryson's doing something, you know, okay. He's taking advantage. So there'll be holes. There's a hole at Quail Hollow 15 par five. Keith Mitchell told me last year, he goes, "Dude, you could play it down 16, hit like a 7-iron on the green. And typically it's a driver and like a 5-wood or a hybrid or something." And I'm like, wow. Thursday morning, we get a note. Playing down 16 will be out of bounds. So they just threw that in there. And that's not the first time I've seen that at a tournament. It doesn't happen often, but someone found a new avenue to play the hole. It is just a hole. Don't forget. It is literally just grass all throughout this area. There's out of bounds clearly shown around the property. And he found a new avenue and they said no. So I lean on your point that, yeah, I would say that playing it down different holes and going over trees and hitting lob wedges into holes, you typically would. I do think as a fan of golf, I'd like to see more mid irons, more imagination, more blah, blah, blah. Hitting driver to me is fast. Watching people hit driver far is fascinating for like a little bit. And then it becomes super mundane because it's the rest of golf that's so interesting. And if you have a lob wedge in, the point is that the dispersion is small, you have less chips and you spin it more. So firm becomes even less firm. So I would like to see either golf courses have different architecture. I don't know what that would be or something just to make it, again, maybe not tougher, but just bring some of the courses to let the courses be what we kind of would want them to be for professional golf, in the sense that we want to see slopes used. We want to see spin, with wedges not help so much. Maybe like, I don't know the answer. But yeah, I mean, there's a point, I guess, where I like what Hale said though, because it isn't that I don't think this is right. It's that it would be good to sit back and think, what do we want golf to be? We are one of the rare, or the only sport I can think of the major ones, that the playing field is different every week. So it's so different every week. I know tennis has a little bit, but we don't even have the same parameters anymore. Every course we've ever played, even throughout the week, will be a different length. The pins are never in the same spot twice in 1 week. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you would do, but I think it's a good question to pose and to think about, because I think that it's important. You know, we want people to be entertained. And clearly people are saying they're not by driver wedge, but little ways I would do it. I mean, again, this week is bringing up this topic and it's so silly because this week was so hard. Like, I just don't get, you know, this is the topic that Twitter has now, that golf is too easy, or technology's made it too easy. And I just don't know about that. There's a rule, I'm pretty sure, and don't quote me on this, but I think that there's a rough length rule on tour about a certain height. And it was made, I think, to limit players hurting them, like their wrists and stuff, because you obviously don't want that. That would be something I may throw out and just say, listen, make it as thick as you'd like. Four C's, maybe five C's, not many more, like one, two C's. make that thing thick, because that would be a way to deter you from smashing driver. I think that this argument, it pertains so much more to other tournaments and not so much this week.
Right.
This week was still the same. The fairways were really hard to hit. The rough was really, really thick. The greens were crazy. We saw a lot of funny bad golf. Shout out to Danny Lee. we saw players lose their mind.
The lost tapes.
Yeah, the lost tapes. But other weeks that we play on general tour events, like Boston, I think Boston is an awesome golf course. And it got eaten alive by one guy this week or that this year, but it got eaten alive. But like the thing was, the rough was kind of nothing. The greens were soft. Of course, we can't control that every week. I wish we could, but we can't. So yeah, maybe it's changing some of the rules as to what the limitations are to pushing a golf course. Maybe it's to change the rules on how close pins can be from the edge. Really make iron play, even if it is a wedge, make it have to be very precise. You know, I think the easiest way is to make fairways, you know, more relevant and more essential. But then again, I don't know how you would fight that if, you know, with how far some people are hitting, because you would always rather hit a shorter club or you'd rather be 100 yards than 140 typically. I mean, right, almost every week, unless it is really, really firm.
So I want to read this Bryson quote because I think it pertains to what you just said. And then I have a question for you. Bryson said about the fairways and about hitting fairways. He said, let's take an example of, you know, somebody making a fairway a yard wide. You know, nobody's going to hit that fairway. Link's going to win. You make the fairways too wide, Link's going to win. So basically he's saying super tight, Link wins because you bomb it down there and you can, you know, for lack of a better term, gouge it out of the rough up there on the green, and you have lob wedge. Somebody else has 7-iron. And if they're too wide, then you can wail away a driver all you want, and you also have an advantage. So I don't know what it is. I'm sure you don't know what it is. I don't know if anybody knows what it is.
Well, why don't we bottleneck it?
Like, I mean, there you go.
Wide at 250 and literally just make it insanely narrow at
305.
Make it 18 yards wide at 305. Because we had that on 12 this week, the par 5. The fairway was 17 yards wide. And the fairway itself was probably 30, but there was like 13 yards of runoff that it wouldn't stay in the fairway. So why don't we just get silly there? And that doesn't change. That doesn't take a whole lot of architecture. We don't need to like bring all these people in and fix anything. We can literally just make it be like, hey, if you want to hit it further, you need to hit it straighter. And brings in Brennan Todd, Kevin Kisners of
you
the
can
world,
hit it
Brennan
back Todd's
of the world.
And
you have the advantage. Now, I remember playing a course in college we played all the time called Meadow Club. Our college team hosted the event there. And these bunkers were played. It's a McKenzie course. These bunkers are placed so amazingly, distance-wise, for me. Every bunker was like 280 to it and 305 over. That's just how it felt. They were staggered. Well, we had a guy on our team named Brandon Hagee who hits it as far as anyone you'll ever see. And we had a guy named Michael Kim who at the time hit it as short as anybody you'll ever see. That's great at golf. I and two of my other teammates hit it that normal distance, the 280 to 305. And the course always felt like there are certain par fives that always felt so narrow because I couldn't fly these bunkers. Michael was short of them, so his fairway felt enormous to me. And Hagee, his fairway felt enormous to me because he could go over both of them. So it just felt oddly unfair that my fairway felt so small and theirs didn't. We were all the same. We were in the same boat. And I feel like I actually have the harder golf course. So do that. Contrive it. Why not? I don't get it. If we're going to keep complaining about this, make it not silly, but make the fairway 30 yards wide back in the middle or back at 250 or whatever. And then slowly, sharply get it more and more narrow every 5 yards. I'm not smart enough to do the math. I'm sure USGA has looked into something like this, but statistically make it so where if Bryson is up in the rough at 320 and I am in the fairway at 290, I have the advantage because not only am I in the fairway, my fairway was easier to hit.
Gotcha. You're still going to pull driver.
Maybe I will.
Bryson's going to have to make a decision off the tee, or these bombers are going to have to make a decision off the tee where they go, I can hit 3-wood. You know,
because length is an advantage because he can still hit 3-wood where I can hit the driver. But
right.
It is
easier to hit and you can hit it straighter. So he's still got an advantage,
always,
but you're going to have a similar
always
distance.
An advantage. Distance, of course, power distance. It is a game, but it's kind of a sport now. And it power matters. So
right.
It's always going to be a benefit.
My only argument to this is I feel like Gil Hance tried to do this in Boston and he put the sitter line bunker out there. And it was the decision was you have a really small place to hit driver. You have to lay back and then you have more club in and all the pros hated it. So, you know,
because everyone had to lay up. That's the issue. There was
okay,
no
so there was
thought.
Nowhere to go with driver. Okay, so
I haven't played that center line. I heard so much about it that week of the tournament from, like, you know, the social media people about right. how, oh, the players didn't like it, so they bitched out. Joe, and I don't think Joe, Mike Caddy Joe, I don't think Joe is, like, the most architecturally, like, minded golfer. But he told me, along with a bunch of other professional golfers who play a lot of golf courses, that that was the dumbest hole that they've ever seen. And no offense to Gil Hance, he probably knows, or not probably, he knows a lot more than all of us. However, if it goes to what Solly always says so brilliantly about drivable par fours, it's only interesting if it's thought provoking. If everyone's going to go for it, it's stupid. And if everyone's going to lay up, it's stupid. That to me, everyone was just like, listen, I'm just going to be short of it. So now there's no thought. So gotcha. Whatever so the math
you've
would be
put,
is,
you've got to give
some,
the option into it.
Yeah. And that, but I hear your point, but from all accounts, from everyone at that tournament, they said this was such a stupid freaking hole.
So what is to you and pros in general, what is the hardest thing about a golf course? So of all of the options, heavy, rough, fast greens, firm, shaved around the greens, what is the thing that if you get to a golf course and you're playing a practice round with JT and Spieth and Bubba, what's the thing that would scare you guys the most and it would be the talking point amongst yourselves about how, what's the thing that would you would say this place is effing hard?
Firm. Okay, always. Olympia Fields had it. I mean, that's all we could talk about was firm. You could keep talking about the rough, but at some point it's just, I've seen it all, man. Yeah, it's thick, but you're going to miss fairways. I'm going to miss fairways. So whatever. Firm takes quality golf shots. Firm makes chipping hard. Firm makes putting hard. And firm makes, people hate to admit this one, firm makes the tee shots harder because the freaking ball never stops rolling. So you run through corners just like we did this week. So you get 9, which is a runway. And if you hit that fairway, the ball will stay in the fairway because it's straight and it will go forever. However, on 16, slants left, or I'm sorry, dog legs left. So if that ball is not curving at the perfect rate, shout out, by the way, to Bryson's drive on that hole, it was unbelievable. But that's, you need to shape it so perfectly or else your ball will just keep rolling through the fairway. So firm, always firm.
Always firm. Last true or boo, MasterCard only picks the best ambassadors.
Most handsome, so boo.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I should have put handsome.
Just kidding. True, obviously.
Yeah, true. There you go. Andy Johnson told me to give you a shout out, said he loved your first MasterCard.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Great, a really, really well done ad post. I thought it was great. I had to go check it out. All right, so done with that. A couple of little points. First, Dan Hicks coming at you hot.
That was so funny. People thought that it was like a day. I thought it was hilarious. I didn't mind it at all. It was also really funny. So that was good. Max going, oh, my. That was great.
I think that to help explain tournaments and championships, I think every day, you know, you and I always are throwing out ideas for TV stuff. And some of yours have been so great that I keep getting messages about them. I love the cut thing you want to do on Friday. But I think that there should be something in the middle of every broadcast, especially at big championships, where you show a 2 or 3 minute compilation of bad golf.
God, yeah. Yeah.
And this isn't to embarrass golfers. It happens every event, every day, so that you know it's coming, but to show the golf course defending itself.
Yeah.
Because I think what happens is we always show the good because the guys we're showing typically are playing great that week. And mind you, you could see Matt Wolf go out there and shoot 4 or 5 over. That's going to happen. But I want to see bad bounces, bad shots, a guy out of position at wing foot, hit a pitch, and it roll, to your point, 95 feet away. I think that would help explain a golf course and why it's so difficult to everybody, and it doesn't just show the good.
I think this is my favorite thing you've ever brought up because I think I've mentioned before, show a bad shot, but I think that there should be a full-blown compilation of, listen, watch 30 guys in a row in the rough, move it like 15 yards, because that was a challenge. I played really bad, obviously, the first day, and Eddie Pepperell played behind me, and I love Eddie, and everyone loves Eddie, but he's the best, and he came up to me, he said, hey, you know, I want you, I know you had a bad day. I had a bad day too, but I want you to know, I really appreciated your second shot on 16. 16, I hit in the rough and hit an unbelievable low hook six iron. Don't know how I did it. It's like 25 feet. And the reason I'm bringing this up is not to brag about how great I was for one solid 10 seconds of the entire damn week, but it was to bring up the fact that another professional golfer, one of the best golfers in the world, noticed just how good that was, because he also saw just how hard what he was doing was from the rough. So yeah, I love that. You need every week, and it doesn't need to be just on the hard weeks. Show me all of the bad shots. Doesn't even need to be a bad bounce. Just needs to be, listen, this four iron Dustin hit on 11 at Boston, they hit the 8 feet. I hit the perfect shot on that hole, what I thought, and it came up 50 feet short, and now I'm chipping up and around a hill. Like, I was so amazed at the shot he hit that day at Boston, yet nobody else could be, because the coverage is almost blinding you to how hard these courses really are. And then to your point, we're not appreciating how good this good golf is. And it's, I think if players were embarrassed, I think that it would take one explanation to get them not to be. It's that by us showing you have a hard time, people will appreciate just how good you are more in the long run.
Yeah, it is hard with an individual sport because players don't want to look embarrassed. But I mean, SportsCenter does not top
screw
10 all the time.
Just let them freaking go. Yeah,
I love not top 10. It's yeah. Great. It's fun to watch because, again,
it's entertainment.
Listen, we all play. We all get bad bounces. We all hit bad drives. You could do drives, approaches, pitching, putting, and have it every week and have it 3 minutes in the middle of the broadcast. And again, I think it would help explain when things are going well, how great the guys are playing versus how tough everybody else is playing. Matt Wolf, you know, we saw him on the first tee on a cell phone. Of course, everybody was having fun with that. I had a friend in the group. You know, he was like walking score, walking. I guess he didn't have stand bearers, but he was doing something there. And I guess Wolf walked up to him before the round and said, "Hey man, can you update me on NFL scores?"
Yeah, that's tight.
Final round of the U.S. Open. He's asking for updates in NFL scores. He vaulted high on my list of favorite players after hearing that story.
So Matt, I was really rooting for him on Sunday. I think he's a winner through and through. He's 21. He has a fourth and a second and. Majors, right. In his whole career, that's all of them he's played two. The reason he is such a winner is it's so easy for him to put aside all the whatever. He's just him. Matt is Matt, and I think that's so cool, and it's admirable. I don't think it's contrived. I think he's just a cool Southern California kid that just likes, you know, he's really good at golf and plays golf really, really well. But yeah, it's Sunday, man. What happens on Sundays? Football happens on Sundays. I want to know the scores. I don't care if I'm right. Winning. Honestly, who cares? And Rory said something really interesting back in the day when he, you know, kind of threw away the Masters in whatever year it was. He said that after that Masters, he looked kind of inward and realized that he was trying to be what Tiger is in the intensity factor on Sunday. What he realized was, that's not me. I'm not an intense guy. I'm more bubbly. I like to, you know, we all talk about his bounce when he walks. That's him. Tiger is head down, eyes laser focus, scary. And sure, if you could be that, that would be awesome. But not everyone is that.
It's a great point. I mean, it's fun to watch Wolf. He feels like I said this, I jumped on Shotgun Start on Saturday night, and I said, he feels like he's having so much fun being a professional golfer.
Yeah.
And I can't always say that about everybody out there. You know, yeah. It doesn't always look like he's having that much fun.
It's a little different when you're 21 and 29.
Oh, you're right. So. I understand. No, I understand. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier. You got burned. I don't think we brought this up on the preview show. You got a pretty good burn. Robbie Zelsny got you with the Fiji water.
Yeah, that was great.
Have we heard of Zelsny? Is he expensing that? I mean, that had to have been...
I'm about to go get a beer with him, so I'll go ask him.
Had to have been $1,000 in Fiji water, right?
I added another comma, big guy. I mean,
do you have
it
any
could
fights?
Have been a million.
Do you have any good fights?
I have to admit, guys, I was pretty checked out this weekend. I watched as much as I could. I was much more invested in the Lakers, Dodgers, and any NFL game. I had too many good, you know, I thought best thing I heard, worst thing I heard. By the way, Harris English losing a ball on one. The 3 minutes feels so fast when you're looking for a ball and so slow on a treadmill. Really, like, really hit me when I saw that.
When they were given the seconds on that, yeah, like 30 seconds left, you're like, well, I mean, it's done. It's over. What are you doing here? I can't believe
so I don't
you
really
lost
have
it.
Flights. I mean, my Feel Good Friday is today. I did a photo or a commercial, big whatever. We have to do a few a year with Titleist and FootJoy. And I had a, we all had like a, they call Usher, but it was basically like somebody to hang with you all day. And my guy, Benny, he is an intern at Stanwich Golf Course. Shout out to that golf course. It looked awesome.
Such a good logo.
Such a great logo. But, you know, he's going to be in the commercial in one of the parts, I think, because he's like, you know, my caddy for the day. But I just, I love the, he's in the intern from the PGA program he did in, he does in Michigan. And it was cool. The joy he had, you know, I asked him like, how bored are you right now? Cause we have been there for, I was there for 5-6 hours a day. How bored are you right now? And he's like, I love this, man. Like, I love it. And it's so refreshing to me speaking to people, like him and like so many others that just love golf and love being around. You know, he said he's never been around professional golfers. It was just cool to be around. You know, he's giving me fist pumps after like I hit good shots and he's like, come, like he's just the best. And it just gives you so much faith in this community we're in that is so separate from the Twitter complaining. You know, it reminds me of Yelp. You know, Yelp, you rarely go to Yelp to write a positive review,
right?
Write a negative one. And that's what kind of the internet sucks you into thinking is this whole thing is crumbling to the ground. And it was cool to see somebody and multiple people with such a fun outlook on golf. And it kind of, I was having a pretty shitty day and it kind of brought me a lot of joy all day getting to hang with him and just feel like that's me if I don't play professional golf, because I love golf and I would love to be around Justin Thomas and me and all the guys that were there, you know, eating with Webb Simpson, like stuff like that. I thought that that's something that I've totally taken for granted at times. And getting to see it kind of through his eyes made me really happy. I'm not going to lie. Like such a small thing of how much fun he had today and how little fun it was for me. Made me be like, you better have some more fun because this is so cool. Like what I get to do, what my life is so awesome. And sometimes you need to see other people because I was obviously not having the best week. And you get reminded, like you're being kind of a punk, like this guy just loves golf. Why don't you just kind of be a happier person?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I've got a best thing I heard this week. It came earlier in the week. We were talking about last episode about going, you know, we talk about the American Eagle.
Yeah.
No name for Eagle, Double Eagle. Listener Mason Ryan sent me a note and said, we should call it the George Washington because the next time it happens will be the first and only time it ever happens.
Ooh.
And I thought that was really good. So I'm in on the George Washington. Yeah,
that's good. All right.
We'll call it the George Dub if you ever do it. You should do it one time in a tournament. You should make an eagle and then make a double eagle on the next hole. That'd be good. Apparently,
that's awesome.
That's
I like
score.
That.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Worst thing I heard this week, Max, it just came across the wire, man. Sizzler has filed for bankruptcy.
No.
Sizzler.
What am I going to do with this gift card I have?
How many do we have? You have like three.
Three in my golf bag. Oh my gosh. What a crime.
So a question for you.
Why, Shane? That's my question.
It's COVID, man. COVID crushed Sizzler. You know, people aren't going to Sizzler and enjoying a nice steak.
To all recession. I thought that level of product max mixed with their price point could not be beaten.
How many? Okay, we should have a bet on this. I want you to, if you get,
I'll bet you one of my three Sizzler gift cards.
Okay. You get within 15 the number, so that gives away there's more than 15. We'll figure out some charity donation. Okay. How many nationwide Sizzlers do you think there currently are?
Currently? Holy cow. I haven't seen one in a minute. Nationwide?
There's one in Phoenix, I think, by the way. We should go one day. Would you be down for a Sizzler lunch?
I mean, I might... we might need to save it. We might need to save Sizzler. So we do
need
to go.
You got any spots on that jacket?
We do
for
need
Sizzler?
To go. I would love to. Pro bono. throw in one, you know, I'll say medium c- cooked steak, because I feel like medium rare there might be a little sketchy.
No. See, I'm the other way. I think medium rare would be medium.
Okay.
That's the deal. It's probably, it'd probably err on the side of overcooked, you know.
I'm going to say 3,000?
Oh, no.
Not even close? No,
not even close.
What is it, like 30?
You just said you hadn't seen one, and you just went with 3,000 sizzlers.
I started, so my first initial guess was 1,200, and I progressively thought that that's only a few a state. So I went up a lot, because I feel like there's just a lot. I've seen a lot of Applebee's. I feel like it's in the Applebee's family. Well, what is it, 20?
107.
Damn.
107 sizzlers. 3,000 is the best thing. You know what? That's the best thing I've heard this week. Sorry, Mason. You're out. That is amazing. Oh my God. 3,000. I wish there were 3,000. There'd be one next door to my house. There'd be as many Starbucks.
Wait, how many Starbucks are there?
I mean, 3,000 probably. This is amazing.
Was this that kind of aggressive?
I don't want to go. You know what? I had something else I was going to say, but it was kind of a negative, so I'm not going to do it. That really made me laugh. Do you have a Mark Hubbard Award for best shot you saw this week?
Okay, so there's 15,000 Starbucks.
15,000 Starbucks?
Uh-huh, in the United States.
How many McDonald's?
Let's look. The best shot I saw this week, as I type and try to think and talk at the same time.
Max is holding his microphone.
I mean, the drive on 16 Bryson, and it was sick. I don't know. I'll say in a bulk, Bryson hit a lot of really good shots to get to pin high from the rough. I think that was kind of underappreciated. Pin high was difficult to do from the fairway this week because of how firm the greens are at Tron. So, to see him do that from the rough was shocking. Like four, there's a huge run up. It's just the shot that I kept thinking of the whole week as weekend as he played so well. Hit in the left rough, hit this like chopped out wedge. I know it was a wedge, but he had chopped out wedge, landed it like 5-10 short of the green and ran it up the very aggressively like pitched false front, which a lot of the holes had. And it went to like 12 feet pin high, 8 feet pin high, and he made birdie. It might have been on Sunday. And that's just a shot that's just really, really hard. I mean, it has to be so perfect. Because if it's 5 feet short, you have this very difficult putt up the ridge. And if it goes long, of course, you just have a 50, you know, footer back down the hill. McDonald's, there's – oh, this is in North America.
That's fine.
No, never mind. That's the United States. 14,000-ish. So there's more Starbucks. Interesting. That makes sense.
There you go.
People there you like go. Coffee you get, so much.
Yeah, more coffee than Big Macs. That's how that works. Compare Marion to Wingfoot. You're kind
literally
of
the opposite.
Okay.
Opposite, but similar in so many ways. Marion, I believe, demanded fairways a bit more. The greens were so much smaller. And the fairways, but you're hitting like fours, five irons off of the tees in Marion. And, you know, Wingfoot, you're in driver and three wood everywhere. Marion, if we're going to go defending golf length or whatever, Marion would probably do it. They use a lot more aggressive one direction hills and slopes, whether it's in fairways or on greens on a couple holes, where you just have one direction. So there's not a bowl. There's a basically a collection area where the ball will get to. But similar in the sense that they're so hard and demanding. It's like everyone is kind of be exposed in some area of the game, I guess. So the greens are much different. The tee shots are similar in the sense that they wind. So they have subtle turns to them. Anytime you're going to play courses like those two with such thick rough, obviously being in the fairway is important. But shaping the ball to the fairway felt very important on both of them. But yeah, I mean, really good question, because the similar scores, obviously winning this week was amazing at 600, but second place even in one over. Yeah, very, very, very similar in that they, as you mentioned earlier, they test you all over. You have to do a good job in all areas.
I mean, I know you didn't play well this week or play as well as you hoped you'd play. I mean, were you,
you could say that.
Did you enjoy Wingfoot? No. Did the players enjoy Wingfoot? Does anybody enjoy it? Or is it just so hard?
The fans would if you guys would just stop complaining so much because it was so hard. The Thursday was easy. Easy relative, not actually easy. It's relative. So I hit 9 fairways that day, which was tremendous. That is a lot of fairways.
That is a lot, yeah.
I think it was the second most of the day. And I played so poorly from the fairways that I saw all of what Wingfoot had to offer around the greens. The next day drove it well again. I think I hit 7, which again was about average to above average. But being in the rough a few more times, I saw all Wingfoot had to had from, you know, the trees in the rough where you're just trying to figure out where the hell you're going to leave it. And then if you could even pull that off. So it's not enjoyable. It's an awesome golf course. So the joy I have for this playing this golf course versus what I feel for the golf course is so different.
Okay.
I love the golf course. I love the design of the golf course. I love how hard it was to hit the fairways. I loved the greens are insane. I liked all of that stuff. But did I have fun? Hell no. It was too hard. I mean, it was. Gotcha. It's just you're punished for the smallest error. You're thinking at all times. You're scared a lot of the time. You're kind of playing, defensive golf from your first shot. So no, it was like the opposite of enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't even, it didn't help that I didn't play well, but it's just a great golf course. I think that's how maybe golf should be. You should be kind of exhausted and over it by the time you finish it, at least for a U.S. Open, professional
right,
golf.
Right, for
mean,
U.S. Open.
U.S. Open or professional championship
golf. If this
golf.
Was every week,
yeah.
You'd be totally
but
gray
it would
at
be
this
fun.
Point.
Yeah, it'd be fun to play this golf course with less rough and slightly softer because I do think that what was fun about the practice rounds was DJ came over to me while I was hitting that bunker shot. He hit actually on 1 that he played way up the slope and came back. I was hitting that shot and he was pointing out to me where he thought I needed to get it to and stuff like that. And it was like, you're looking at two golfers having fun, watching somebody land a ball like 30 feet the wrong direction and come back to a foot, maybe make it. So that was fun. Like that part of golf is fun, but when you're in a tournament, that's not very fun, especially when you're on the wrong side of that hill where you're literally like plugged in that same bunker. And now the shot that I practiced for 10 minutes with the best player in the world helping me, essentially, I am pitching out to 80, 90 feet across the green and then have the putt coming back. So it's the opposite of fun. Plus it was windy and cold that Friday. It was not easy. So I love Wingfoot. I'd come back anytime, but not fun.
The tournament conditions and the fact that you're out there trying to grind for your job.
It's ridiculous.
And it's not going your way. It's like, it's tough.
I mean, how often do you see Justin Thomas shoot 5 under and then whatever he shot the rest of the week? How often do you see Jordan Spieth, as much as you guys want to talk about bad he's been playing, he has the best short game. He shot 11 over. Like, it was a nightmare.
It's a great point. I just want to say, to everybody that listens to this podcast and that considers himself a golf fan, I do think that complaining about everything is getting a little out of hand. And I know it might just be social media and that just might be where everybody goes to complain about everything. But, we're supposed to enjoy this as fans and lovers of golf or basketball or football or whatever. I get so many videos sent to me and it's, this guy's getting lined up by his caddy, and they're complaining about guys putting the club behind the ball in the rough. I do think we all need to take a step back and remember that we love golf. We enjoy golf. We enjoy this sport. It's fun to be a fan of it. And if we're sitting there always trying to find something to complain about by the end of the day, on our side, not on your side, Max, on our side of things, we're kind of missing the point of what it is. It's supposed to be a getaway. It's supposed to be, we have 4 hours away from our lives or families or whatever we're doing and that's stressful, that's real stress on our side. Just remember that you don't have to, if somebody shoots 65 at a U.S. Open, like there's not a you don't have to get mad about it. You don't have to just be upset. It shouldn't be personal to you.
I think if you, if your joy in watching golf is now to kind of complain about it, and that's why you like watching it, or that's how you've reacted now to it, but you still watch, I'm happy. Like, I want you to watch golf, both selfishly and just, I want you to have your entertainment. I think you'll be a healthier person if that's not the reason you're watching and that's not your kind of hobby with it. Now, I know Twitter kind of allows for that. I've kind of jumped in that where we just find the littlest thing and nitpick it and make fun of it, as I do with Bryson and things like that at times. But so, yeah. So if that's the way you want to watch it, go ahead. I don't care. I think that, again, you'll, if you left Saturday watching that golf and all you could talk about was how easy it was and didn't talk about how amazing Matt Wolf is, to me, I'm allowed my opinion too, you really missed the point, and you missed the future of golf, sure, which is, yep, Matt Wolf, not just how far the ball is going, not how, where the scores were. You missed Matt Wolf. And I think that's sad to me. I think that you know, I also think that the information you're getting from Twitter is not fact. That's why these golf courses, whether you've been there 5, 10 times or 20, you didn't play the US Open, it is probably different. That's why I tweeted the two things. I said, the greens aren't soft. They're just huge slopes that are stopping the ball. And I said, these aren't funnel pins, unless you have the correct angle. Like, those things I felt like were important to say, because I heard so much of the opposite from people who truly don't know what they're talking about. They are listening to, it'd be like in sports and in other sports, listening to Jalen Rose say something, who I love Jalen Rose, and then you regurgitate it. And, you know, you can. He's an expert. He is a phenomenal mind in basketball. This is now you're listening to what your friend said and regurgitating it, who also was not at that tournament. He doesn't actually know. So that's where I think you may miss the boat as far as credibility goes. There are times they might be right, and there's times they might be wrong. But when you hear a bunch of golfer, or when you see a bunch of golfers shooting over par, and you are telling me that it's too easy, I would argue that point. Because again, as we talked about the 2000 US Open,
the numbers argue the point.
Yeah,
that's 6-5-4 under par.
6-5-4 under led after the first day of the US Open at Pebble, that played about as hard as anything, and we marvel at how amazing what that one, you know, one Tiger Woods did. And yet this week we have 5-under leading after the first round with literally no wind and no sun. And we are losing our minds at how easy the tournament is. It's Thursday. The tournament will cut, and it did, and it came back, and there was one person under par, and we are still talking about how easy the golf course was set up. And it's just, it is factually wrong.
So last thing, just got back from New York today. I know you're still on the East
Lucky.
Coast. Gotta tell you this, bro. Cannot state how excited I am that sports are going to start at 5:30. I can't watch the games.
Yeah, what, the NFL's about to start, or no, probably just started.
Yeah, and it's 8:30 your time.
I mean,
I can't stay up for these things. I mean, I know I'm old. I know I'm old, for God's sakes, but I had to actually do stuff, and I had jobs and stuff.
What's the sweet spot age-wise to watch sports on the East Coast? Because if you're young, you have a bedtime, so you can't watch it. And if you're older, you just want to go to bed. So is it 20 or like the bar, 21?
This is the fairway width argument. It's like, what's the perfect width?
It's an hourglass.
I lived in Connecticut when I was 30. And I couldn't stay up. So yeah, it's got to be...
I think you're 22, you're at the bars and you catch it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be the college and beyond. Okay. You know, I just... Cool. I can't do it. It's always a bummer. I wake up in the morning. I even have gotten to the point where I forget to check who won. It took me till about noon today to remember to check if the Pats won or not. You know,
yep.
I was like, I didn't stay up for the whole game. You are taking... You've got a week or two off, and when's your
2 weeks
event?
Off, Shriners in Vegas in a couple weeks.
Are you doing back-to-back Vegas?
I don't know if I'm going to, I don't think I'm going to get in the other, the CJ Cup and Zozo. So I'll do, it all depend, but I'll, right now, if I don't get in those, I'll play Vegas, have a couple weeks off, play Houston, the Masters, and Mayakoba in Mexico. Nice. If not, I'll play Vegas, Sherwood, Augusta, Mayakoba.
I'm excited for you to get back, just because we're going to maybe play some golf.
Yeah, and, it should be nice. The weather is getting a little better.
Oh, it's nice today, bro. Really nice today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you rate and review the podcast if you're a fan of it. We always appreciate that stuff. And we'll be back next week with another episode. We're in some of these episodes that are not going to be so golf focused in terms of what actually happened to the event. We've got some fun ideas up our sleeves for those. So we'll be asking for your input on those as well. So make sure you look out for those tweets from Max and myself. Max, thanks so much for you know, being on the East Coast and taking time into your almost into your bedtime to do this.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Hey, everybody, wash your hands. Shout out to MasterCard. Just feel like I owe them one. sorry for the poor first week performance. Now we're even. And yeah, go Lakers. You know, this is fun. I can't wait to get on the West Coast with you so I can watch sports at a reasonable time.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.